Hello and welcome to the Comedian's Paradise. This is the podcast where we speak to a lot of intriguing and very fascinating people from across the entertainment world. A lot with very unique stories that will astound us, maybe even shock us, maybe even disgust us, or they'll make us laugh. We've got such a wide variety of different guests. And today's guest is a man who has been across the world. He was the co-founder of Spy Monkey, one of the best theatre, clown, performing, tour companies across the globe. He's a man who has had many different stories. He studied in Goliath, just like me, but he's spent 20, 30 years in clown. He is a professional man of it going one way, but it going the other way. He started out in acting, but found out he has the gift for getting you laughing like hyenas. Please welcome the brilliant, the scintillating Aitor Bussiri.
Thank you, Marvin. I'm very happy to be here.
What did you think of my intro? Was it very comedy dell'arte? That's what Matteo Destro said.
That's what he said. If he said that, then it's probably all right. You did it absolutely amazing. I don't know much about comedy dell'arte, but it was very good. It was a nice introduction. And you said nice things about me, and I can't complain when people said nice things about me.
But what if they say bad things like, yo, AI tour, he's this, he's that. I mean, I...
I don't know what they... I try not to listen too much about what they say about me, because I feel a little bit embarrassed or, you know, prudish. But I always think, you know, if they keep calling me, it means there must be something good.
Oh, God. Now, for anyone that doesn't know about you, like, tell us a bit of intro, like how you got into clowning and how you got to where you are today.
Well, I started to do theater many years ago when I was a young man, and I wasn't very good. And it wasn't easy to be a bad actor. It's normal. I mean, I didn't know that to be an actor, first you have to be bad until you become good. And but I was suffering. So there was a moment where I was doing a play, and I was so bad that every single person in the company got an award in this theater festival but me. So they had to kind of give me a present on the side, so I will not feel completely left out. Anyway, one day, a clown teacher called Cesar Saratu came to teach a clown workshop in the company where I was doing theater. And I stood up, and I was very funny. The teacher would say, very good, very good, very good. And I was so used to hear very bad, very bad. I didn't understand. He said, really good, really good, really? I try again, very good. Everybody laugh. I try again, everybody laugh. And I was doing the same things that I was doing in the theater, but everybody thought it was really bad. But in the clown, it was very good. So I thought, I'm going to do more of this, because who doesn't like to be good? And I kept... It sounds like very simple, but that's exactly how it was. And then, I went to a drama school, and the teachers, my clown teacher and my pantomime teacher and things like that, you should go and study with Philippe Collier. You should go and study with Philippe Collier. And I studied with Philippe Collier. And I had a brilliant time, because when I arrived to the school, what I remember is Philippe telling us, welcome to the school of the bad actors. And I thought, that's it. I'm in my place. This is where I belong. And I had a wonderful time with Philippe. And when I when I say that I have a wonderful time, he spoke to me. He spoke to me. I got him. I know what he meant. He gave me permission to be bad and enjoy it, and he gave me permission to be good and enjoy it, and he gave me permission to play, and he gave me permission to have so much fun that I will not want to leave the stage. So after the School of Philippe, I said, this is what I want to do. And in one job that I got a job in Switzerland, and Toby Park was playing there, and Petra Massi also got the job. And while we did a very bad show in Switzerland, we love playing together. So we decided to create a Spy Monkey to do a small little funny shows in the winter. And I had done a show with Cal McChrystal, who was our first director. And I asked Cal if he would like to direct us. And he said, look, I don't know. He wasn't a director at the time. He was starting. He had done one directing job. And then he said, look, I'm going to go and play with you for a week. If I laugh, I direct your show. If I don't laugh, we just separate and that's it. And we laughed so much that we worked together for the next 10 years.
Well, so,
yeah.
Would you, it's funny, isn't it, how something like that happens. You go and expecting one thing and then this happens or that happens.
Yeah. And it's so funny to see the videos of the time that we were doing that research and development week about our first show, Stiff, show about funerals, where the camera is vibrating all the time because the person that was holding the camera was laughing so much. We found each other's, the three of us, and Carl and Stefan, we found each other, the fourth of us, and then we said, I love playing with my friends, so I'm going to play with these people for as long as I can. It was by pure chance we met, and we enjoyed very much playing together.
So with sort of Spy Monkey now, but you've been running it for years and years, and now it's sort of world renowned. I mean, like, how did it get to the, like, it's gone to here, and then it's like,
well, with the Spy Monkey, now it's, you know, we have a name within the clown world, but we are not so popular that we have the beautiful villas in Beverly Hills.
No.
You know, so, but we are working. We have managed to create work for us, directing shows, teaching and performing. Until 2021, we were four people. And one of us went to Vegas and one of us died, as it happens, you know. So that kind of has shaken us very much. And now we are trying to find out exactly what is the future, or if there is a future. But I will think that what we have brought to the world of clowning and performing is that but I don't know if we are responsible for that, but we always liked our clowns to act. So our clowns wanted to do theater plays. I'm sure there has been many people who has done that before. But when we grew up as performers and clowns, most of the clowns will do music and clowning, magic and clowning, or circus and clowning. And we thought we wanted to do clowning and theater. And that, I think it is because we all trained with Philippe, and some of the best numbers, that clown numbers that we saw in the school, were not in the clown workshop. It was in the Greek tragedy workshop or in the Shakespeare and Chekhov workshop, where an idiot was trying to be very good in Shakespeare or Chekhov, and we all laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh forever. So I will give credit to Monsieur Philippe for that. And we just did it. We did it. We've done three plays, four plays, or five, I don't know.
Yeah, I found that as well. I tried to do some emotional stuff on stage and they just end up laughing.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm like, I'm trying so hard to do this, and they're just like, oh. But I mean, one thing that's René Bazinet said to me is that a lot of you've got to be comfortable being embarrassed, so in like being comfortable looking like the complete moron and like accepting that about you. So many of us try and hide away from that, but the thing about the school is that the thing that I got away from it is that whatever is your weakness and is your strength on that stage, and just go along with it.
Yes, but I wouldn't say you have to be comfortable. You just have to be aware of it.
Okay.
Because I don't think we laugh if you are comfortable.
Okay.
I think the laughter begins when you try and you are very bad and you realize you are very bad. And that realization and acceptance in front of an audience is not like, look how bad I was. It's not that. It's, okay, I was bad. I'm going to try again because I'm going to be good now. And then you try again and you are even worse. and then you accept it again. Oh, whoa, what's going on? This is... I go again. Do you know what I'm saying? So as a performer, you know, you might be a little bit comfortable, but in my experience, it's better not to be too comfortable.
Okay.
Because the clown is always in a, I think it is always in a state of tension that gives you the fact that you want to be good and loved by the audience.
Okay.
But you can't.
No.
Do you know what I'm saying? It's like two things pulling in opposite directions.
You want... Could you explain that a bit more and go into more detail, what you mean by that?
So, you say that... the thing that you learn in the school is to be comfortable with being bad.
Yeah.
And I would like to say that you don't get it. I wouldn't say it's to be comfortable. I will rather use the word with the word acceptance that you are bad.
Okay.
Because no one likes to be bad.
Okay.
You only get the love of the audience because you are trying to be good. It doesn't work, and you accept that you were bad. You see what I'm saying? Because very often I've seen shows of people that goes and they just go and they try so badly that we know it's never going to be good.
Okay.
So we don't see them failing on the stage.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I see what you mean.
And I think it's important to remind ourselves that that as far as I am concerned, the clowns always try to be good, but they always try to be good doing something that is a little bit above their talent. So we all know they are going to fail, but they don't. And then discover in front of an audience that, oh, maybe that's a little bit too much for me. And they accept it. Something that normally no one does. Normally people in the world doesn't accept when they're bad. Politicians, when make mistakes, they don't get fired. Lots of people know, but clowns do. Clowns always accept when they're bad.
Okay.
And that's why we like, why we love them and we laugh with them.
It's always one of the things that I found quite interesting in the school is when people did a lot of those things, as you mentioned there. But the thing that was the real difficult bit was when they tried to recreate them to go into the show, and it didn't have the same thing. Like it completely bombed. Like they when they performed in it, it was like they were doing a job or they hated it.
Yeah, but that's the key word. That's the key word, perform it. Because the clown doesn't really perform it. He just has to do it again. So when we work, we found that it's very, the most difficult thing is what you just said, to repeat the funny material. And we find that the way we talk about the material has helped us to repeat it like it is like if it was the first time.
Okay.
So for instance, when we play one, so if we say, if we do some funny material, we try to describe the material as a chain of games.
Okay.
And games, normally you always play to the best of your abilities. They're always the same, but always a little bit different. And when you fail at playing a game, you always fail for real. You can act it. If you fail playing tennis, it's really bad. But you probably will fail playing tennis sooner or later if you play for real. So we try to play all the material that we do like a game. And as soon as it's bad, we accept it. Okay. And that has helped us to repeat the material, the funny material that we create in rehearsals, and that we have later on converted into shows. That for many people, when they look at the shows, they think they are improvised, but we never improvise anything. We just, our way of acting, normally it doesn't look acting.
Yeah.
Because we are clowns. But we're acting. But it doesn't look like acting. So words very often are very deceiving when we talk about this thing that we do, which is clowning.
Yeah. What you said there is definitely with a lot of the best comics. People think that it's just come off stage, and that's where the best, it's like with best footballers, they make it look easy, they make it look childish. And
don't misunderstand me, Marvin, because we also flop a lot.
Oh yeah, I can imagine.
We don't have the formula of success. Don't know. We know how to do our work, and we know a little bit what does work for us. But we still have performances where people don't laugh.
Yeah.
And it's not pretty.
Because one thing that I found with clowning on the stand-up circuit when it's done there, I found with a stand-up set, it's a lot safer. Like there is more controlled and it can go badly. But with clown, because it's so pushed out there, with some of the things, it can go really, like the failure is a lot worse than, that's what I've seen. That's my perspective from what I've seen.
I hear you.
With the clowns.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, I never done much stand up, but if I see, I don't know, David Chappelle, in a Netflix special or HBO special or whatever, for me he's a little bit of a clown.
Okay.
Because he has a very original rhythm. He doesn't have the kind of classic stand-up rhythm of the jokes. He kind of mixes stories with jokes, and he has the impulse more of a clown who says funny things than a stand-up who tells jokes. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're saying that it's the performance that makes him more than the actual what's written on
with the material. Yeah, exactly. And I think for many of the stand-ups nowadays, that's more important. I wonder how far you can take that. And we are trying to, in one of your questions, for me, clown is what's funny. If it's funny, it's clown. If it's not funny, it's not clown. So I see stand-ups that are funny, for me, they're clowns. I see actors who are funny, for me, they're clowns. I see conductors of orchestras who are funny, for me, they're clowns. So
you don't see any of the art forms. You see art forms as different. You see them all as, if it's funny, it's clown. You
for me,
like,
yeah.
Categorize it. Okay.
Yeah, because the clown, the only thing that clown has different to everything else is that is the desire to make people laugh.
Okay, yeah.
Because how many people, even there are lots of politicians or people who speaks in public who use comedy, use clowning for other purpose that is not just to make people laugh, you know what I'm saying? So you have to give a speech about quantum physics. If you make people laugh, you are clowning for quantum physics. Perhaps we clown just to make people laugh, but to make people laugh, what do you do? For instance, what do you do, Marvin, to make people laugh? You tell jokes.
Not me. What I do is, so I've got, I do magic tricks and they go wrong, but I often know the end points to create the same, to create the laugh. But the audience are always with me. They think, they don't know if I'm doing it deliberately or if I'm doing it deliberately or not. Sometimes it is deliberate, sometimes it isn't deliberate, but there's always that line with me and the audience. They don't know if I'm being a deliberate idiot.
So in a way, you are a magician who makes people laugh.
In a way, yes. Yeah. In a way. Yeah.
So that's what I mean, that we use different things to make people laugh. Even Vigo says himself, I am a comedian. Because he doesn't call himself, I'm a clown. He says, I'm a comedian. You see what I'm saying? And you and me, we just call him clown. Yeah. But he calls himself a comedian. So that's why for me, and I think every opinion about this is valid, because laughter is so subjective. And for instance, if now, like we just taught, I just taught a workshop here in Worthing, and there were 22 funny people. And it's very interesting, you know, when I teach, what we do is we try to use my words, not the words of the funny people who come to the thing. But even when we go to Philippe, we come out with our own interpretation of the words that Philippe said. You know what I'm saying? Because it is that interpretation what help us do what we are doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hope I'm not boring you, Marvin.
It's you. So one of the things you said there, I do. Yeah. I One of the reasons why I set up the podcast is that I like comedy, and I share that view of you, like in terms of like, I just love it, talking to people from different walks that achieve the same things in terms of comedy. Because I feel, I agree that that's the reason, what you said there about everyone's opinion being valid, that's the main reason why I set up the podcast.
Yeah.
I definitely agree with that. And that stuff about what you said, Philippe, everyone always talks about you going your own journey afterwards. And then it's for you to find that. And that's similar to all walks of performing or any walk of like when you're trying to achieve something, it's your own journey. Yeah. You can try and be like somebody else, but that's not going to work. It's for you to find out what works for you.
Yeah.
And that's what I gathered from what you said.
That's what I was saying. Yeah.
And yeah, but I tell you what though. Yeah, no, if you speak to a lot of comedians I know, if you said that to them, they would be completely against it. They're very strong about it. Like a lot of comics say to me, oh, if it's not like a written joke or this and that, it's not comedy. And they're very strict in it. I've seen some of their faces when they see me or other acts do something that isn't what their view is on comedy. And they get funny reactions. They roast you. You are right. We shouldn't compartmentalize things. It's about the end result. It's a different way to achieve the same result. So what's the point of saying this and that? That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. And in a way, I will tell you two things. One, just to kind of to take a finger to the fanatics. there are Talibans everywhere. And, you know, if it works for them, I don't say anything. But the reason why you suddenly come to your stand-up routine and suddenly you trip and you have a 5 minutes routine where you try to stand up and you can't is because you like it. No?
Yeah.
Because you think it's funny and it makes you laugh. So you hope that the audience will laugh with you. Now, the reason why a comedian comes and say, good evening, everyone. You wouldn't, I'm really bad at this, but good evening, everyone. You wouldn't guess who did I met on my way to the theater this evening? Why they do that? Because they like it. Does that mean that material is better than the other material? We don't know until we try it in front of an audience. And the material that each one of us play, we always play it because we like it.
So one of the things that is sometimes a bit of an issue with what I see occasionally in comedy is that people think that they can choose what they do. And one of the things that I found in clowning as well, like people going with the idea, I think it's not really a choice to find out what works for you. You can't force what works for you. You find it out through playing it and testing ideas out, and then you find out what works. You can't just manufacture everything to be a certain way.
No, I agree. But sometimes, Marvin, sometimes I think you say, I think it will be funny if I come with 20 balloons and I try to, and I tell the audience I'm going to blow them in 15 seconds. 30 balloons in 15 seconds. I have to blow 2 balloons per second. And I will be naked behind all the balloons. You see? Sometimes you have ideas that are really funny and they are going to work.
Yeah.
Just to see what I'm saying. But I agree with you. Eh? I think it's true that you, I think it's a reality that more often than not, our ideas are very good in our head, but they get completely transformed once you try them in the rehearsal room and transform them again when you probe them. When you play them in front of the audience. And I think we should be open to transform them in relationship to the reaction of the audience and in this relationship to what happens in the room when we rehearse.
Yeah.
Which I'm just saying the same thing that you are saying with different words, because I agree with that.
No. Yeah. It's a different perspective, because I spent most of my time in comedy, but I do partake in a lot of clowning, and I think I'm probably going to shift more into it because that's what works better for me. But they're all the same thing of achieving the laugh.
Yeah. And also, I think, I don't know what you think, but maybe I'm wrong. But when I see, I was drifting through my Netflix thing yesterday, and I saw some specials of some comedians. And what struck me very much is that if some years ago, 10 years ago or 15 years ago, I will see comedians, and most of their funny will come from the written, for whatever they have written. It was like the comedians will put their mouths in front of the microphone and almost completely will forget about their bodies. And they will read, say a kind of a monologue or a speech that they have learned, etc. Nowadays, when I see comedians, many of them, they have thought, they have prepared in the rehearsal room, well, I'm going to grab the microphone like this, and I'm going to move my body in this way. And then when I do this question, I'm going to do this and that and that. You see what I'm saying? The whole stand-up comedy world, I think, has been influenced by the world of clowning and performance, and it has evolved into become a more performative than it used to be.
Okay.
Yes, that's what I think, but that's what it looks like to me. But I might be wrong.
It's what you said there is very similar to. Do you know Marko Stojanovic from the MIME organization? He said something very similar to what you said in terms of if you do a movement and you get a laugh, that's MIME, rather than like he's saying that in the community of MIME, a lot of people are saying if it's not done in a certain way, it's not MIME. But he's saying we should change it. Like if you're doing a movement and it does a certain way, that's MIME.
Okay. That's fine. I mean, tomato, tomato, you know. We call it physical comedy.
Yeah.
Whatever. Well, whatever tickles your fancy. Don't care.
Now, you've been like on different sides of the performing. Like you've been on three different sides. Four different sides, like promoting shows, you've been like the teacher, a director, a student. Like, how do they sort of help each other? And what do you learn from doing all of those things together?
Well, this is I don't know. I mean, the thing is, they are all super related. It's like they are. I like to say that I am a performer, a clown performer, that teach because perform, that directs because performs.
Okay.
If I will not perform, I will not feel very comfortable teaching, because all the mistakes that the students do in the workshops, I've done them before. So I know exactly how they feel. And I think when I direct, I like to direct because I am a performer. And I would like someone like me directing.
Okay.
Because I understand, or I have an experience of the problems that we performers face while we perform.
Okay.
Or while we try to create material to perform.
It keeps like all the senses intact, and you get a full understanding of, well, not a full understanding, you never such thing, but like it keeps you a greater understanding of the whole thing rather than just looking at it from one point of view.
I think it gives me a greater understanding of the whole thing for the pub, when I drink in the pub with my friends. but when I go to perform and I have been directing, for the first week, I'm really bad. because I think I know all the answers. And I think that I am better director than the director. So it's shit. And when I go to perform after I've been teaching, the same thing. So performing, I think they are different things, perform, direct, and teach. But they kind of feed each other's in a very strange way. They feed each other's for sure. But the one that is more exciting for me is the performing part. For me.
It's the bit about the laugh. It's when you get the big laugh, it's very addictive, isn't it? There's nothing like it.
Yeah, I don't think there is nothing like it. Yeah. And I haven't performed for quite a while, so, but you get the huge laugh and you can't wait for the next day to do it again. So then you will get the same laugh, that huge laugh, but it's never exactly the same. So you get a little bit frustrated and then you just wait for the next day. And it happens a little bit the same. And then the next day, then when you stop pursuing that laugh, another day like that happens and you think, fuck, that's amazing. This laugh, I had so much fun today. Tomorrow is going to be the same. And it starts again, the whole cycle. And in a way, I think it's part of the clown business. Those laughs, and impossible laughs, that you never know very well how to get them. And then you spend time going after them. And then when you stop going after them, they appear again. And I don't know, it's a very ghost and apparition experience for me. That's the way I live it, anyway. But I love them, yeah, it's addicted.
Would you say it's like a drug? Because that's just something that I've spoken to with a lot of comedians. They say it's like an addictive drug. Or what would your thoughts be on it?
I think it's really good fun. But the more you do it, I don't know. It is. I wouldn't say it's like a drug for me. Because my favorite thing of that is the fun that I have. And I love the sound of the laughter. But I also get fun from other moments of the performance as much as from the laughter. I like to make people laugh, but in the search, in the working towards that laughter, many other things happen that I also love. So, and that gives me lots of fun and pleasure. So I don't know if I would say at this point in my life, I don't know if I would say it's like a drug. Addicted for me. I am addicted to wine or to drugs, but not so much to that.
Yeah.
I don't know, because it's never easy. Do you know what I'm saying? You have to work. So for things that I am addicted, I never have to work. Just buy them. I don't know. Sorry, I'm gonna, yeah. But I love it. I love performing. My favorite thing in the world, yeah.
What do you think you would have done had you not become a clown?
Well, I don't know. I don't have a fucking clue. I don't know. I don't know at all. Recently, I took surfing. And now I love surfing. So that's my favorite thing in the world at the moment. Surfing. But I will never be a surfer. I could not have been a surfer. I'm a fat person. You know, it's impossible. I'm not very flexible or very sporty, but I love it. But I, when I started to do clown, even if I didn't want to be a clown, I knew that's what I had to do. It was there. It was me. Mm. It was, I mean, I am a clown in the airports. I am a clown when I order a coffee in Starbucks.
Yeah.
No one laughs, but I know if I will do it in a theater, everybody will laugh. Because suddenly my coffee dropped and it went over my coat. Then everybody's laughing. Or I'm going to check in my suitcase and it opens and all my clothes are there. And there is a big queue behind and everybody's upset. And I'm trying to close it really well, but I can't. You know, full of clowning situations. Hmm. So.
Can anyone be a clown and accept that type of situation?
In principle, I'm going to say yes.
Okay.
But some people have to work much harder. Some people have to work much harder. Others have to work much less for clown. But in the world that we live in, there is a stereotype of what's good. And normally clowns don't fit in that. Therefore, those people are better for clowning than the ones that feed what is good in this world that we live in, the people that fit that stereotype.
Yeah.
So all those kind of, I don't want to use these words, but all those misfits, all those ones that do not fit that stereotype are better for clowning in this world. But if the world will be different, then other people will be the clowns. But clowns normally, in my opinion, are people who don't fit that stereotype of what is good. And in the world that we live in, all those stereotypes are changing very rapidly. Because there was a time where women could not be clowns. There was a time where many people would say many, many things will not be clown. And this is a very exciting time for clowns because everything is changing, you know. And so now we know many more things to play with.
Hmm.
So your question was that, yes, I think everybody could be a clown, but for some people it's going to take a long time.
Everyone has the potential to do it, but it's whether people choose it. It's like a martial art, like Brazilian jiu-jitsu to get a black belt. Everyone could do it, but everyone's prepared to make the decision to do it.
I always say to people when they come to the workshop, the most important thing is that you want to be funny. Do you want to be funny? Yes, you will be funny. In your failure, we will laugh at you. Tell a joke. The best joke that you know. Exactly. Exactly. As soon as you start to think in the best joke, you know that no one is going to laugh. And we will laugh at you because you said really bad that joke. And if you say it very well, we will laugh too. Because it's a good joke.
And by the time you've thought, you've lost too much, you've lost the moment or the connection.
Not necessarily. I will argue.
Okay.
Because if I tell you, Marvin, tell me your best joke. You see, you're already starting to think. And now, me as a member of the audience, I can see how you are thinking. He's thinking for the very good joke. And then you could do things like, you could play things like, my best joke. You can have a game there of deciding which one is the best. You see what I'm saying? And that comes from the desire of telling something funny. Not necessarily something funny for saying anything, but with a joke, it works, I think.
Hmm. But I'm not trying to put you in any corners. It's all a conversation, but I'm just saying, a lot of the audience, when they see you do clown, they think you've come up with it on the spot and you haven't come up with an idea. And that's
not always.
But I'm not making sweeping statements, but a lot of the times.
I will not be able to say that. Because in my experience as a clown and seeing clown shows, most of the clown shows that we see are clown shows when someone says, today I'm going to play, or I'm going to tell something. Today, everyone, today I will go up there and jump into this glass of water. Yeah. So a normal clown show, we know as an audience that the clown has been rehearsing.
Okay.
No, because he has prepared that number.
Okay.
There are some kind of clown numbers who are a clown pass from the back of the stage, sees the empty stage and says, there's no one here. I'm just going to go and jump into the stage. No?
Hmm.
You see what I'm saying? And then, he's just improvising something. You see what I'm saying? So it depends on the story, because if you improvise some of your material, there is a reason, there is a dramaturgy, a clown dramaturgy. Why are you improvising?
Hmm. Yeah, that's what, with stand-up being more studied, like, I'm not saying the different, but from what a lot of people used to assume, that stand-up just came on stage and talked about their story. But now there's more research being done. They know that there's more prepared routines.
Yeah, yeah.
In the stand-up environment, when I come on stage, a lot of people always believe that I'm just improvising stage.
And okay, then I hear you. For instance, I work in a circus in Switzerland where the clowns were doing a number that was 400 years old.
Okay.
The clowns, obviously, they have not been doing it for 400 years, but, you know, the number was really, really old. And it was a very good number, but they play it really badly. So I think clown numbers, at least the good ones, have been rehearsed quite a lot. And they always have that layer of unpredictability and improvisation. And will it be improvised or is being rehearsed? Is it in the moment or it is not? The good ones move a little bit in that they don't look rehearsed, if you know what I mean. But they are rehearsed. Because when we feel that they have been rehearsed, we feel more ready to laugh, I think.
Hmm.
I think. But maybe I'm now just talking my taste.
Yeah. It's, yeah. No, that's... One of the things that I heard from a comedy talking on that matter, like someone who does comedy in Angel, they've told me that when they're doing jokes, they don't do it like a monologue. What they do, even though they're doing the same bit, is they change little things in it so that it tricks their body into doing something new and they deliver it with energy. So they'll either change a little bit how they move their body, or they'll change slightly the wording so that it looks like a performance rather than just.
Because it makes it more likeable for the audience, I imagine.
And does it make it a bit more of a game, because you're still not quite getting it? You're making it new because you're still playing games, little things to try and...
Possibly. It adds a level of unpredictability.
Which
makes it fun for the audience. Yeah.
And yourself.
Yeah. And also as if, because you change your body and it's like you are telling, oh, look what I thought now. And the others laugh and then you move your body again. And I have all this other idea. Do you know what I'm saying? Because your body is talking, your body is telling that part of the story that you are not saying with words.
Hmm. What?
So probably your friend will say that's mine.
Ah, yes. Yes. Uh, That's true. I'll message him about it tomorrow. Shall I credit you?
Doesn't matter. It's just for fun.
No. Two little things from here. How do what was the bit I wanted to say? I've forgotten now.
Don't worry.
So, who were clowns that you admire, that, and what do you admire about what their quality on stage?
I am not very good because I have a very bad memory, but when I read the question that you sent me before, I thought of someone that I really like very much, which is Natalie Palamides. And I love her danger. Every time I see her perform, I always think, oh my God, what's she gonna do now? I used to like this couple of clowns in Italy called the Colombaioni. They were absolutely amazing. Two, I saw them when they were a little bit old, but they were like incredibly unpredictable and dangerous and really stupid and really funny.
Okay.
And that I have seen, there was a company that I love some years ago in England called People Like Us.
Yeah.
I thought they were so funny.
Yeah.
Like world-class funny. Javier, David, and John. And directed by Carl McChrystal. Oh, they made me laugh so much. They were brilliant. And Vigo, do you know Vigo? Vigo, do you know?
Yeah.
Julia, his girlfriend. Jean-Luc Roberts, Sammy, all these people who have come to the workshops, in my workshops, they have been brilliant. And they have been so funny and so great that very often when we are doing a workshop, I can't go to see any shows. Because I like much more what I see in the workshop that what anyone does on the stage. And I always loved seeing my partner Petra Massi and Stefan Kreis and Toby Park playing, because I always find them really funny. I will play with them and they will always make me laugh on the stage. So those, I don't know. I think of, you know, Larry David makes me laugh a lot.
Yeah. Cool. No, that's interesting, especially what you said on the workshop bit, because you see all those. Yeah. That's very interesting. Yeah, I've not heard that before. That's interesting. That's very interesting.
Yeah, we were doing the workshop today. I just finished, some people were doing some things today here, a stupid exercise, and some people were really funny. This Piotr, a Polish man, a Polish actor. Who is his clown looks like a hooligan. You know, with a skinhead, and he's always with a can of beer, with a can of beer in the workshop. It's so stupid. It's so funny. And if I tell you, well, it's not funny, but he was really funny this morning. It's full of mischief and naughtiness and excellent.
Yeah. That's his clown.
Exactly. But I've seen him playing his clown, and he did have another clown who was like a Dracula, like a vampire. And now he's putting his clown in another world, and it's really funny too.
I actually know him. I performed with him in Goliath, and he is absolutely brilliant. And I got him on the podcast.
Okay.
And we had a chat on this, and this is something I learned from the school as well, that he says that he sometimes finds it easier to perform in English than in Polish.
Yeah, of course.
And that's something I found as well when I was doing, so I now play Zoe on stage as my comedy act.
Okay.
And I found it from Carlo. He gave me an exercise where I was talking in Spanish gibberish.
Nice.
And it made me a better performer because I wasn't so fixated on the words. I was more focused on what was going on there.
Yeah.
Does being from where you forget all the words and like you're trying to say the right thing occasionally distract you from the performance?
Well, yes. I mean, look at me. Look the way I talk. I lived in England since 1994. And until very often, people will ask me after the show, that was really good. They say, that was really good. I say, thank you very much. And they will say, oh, is that your real accent?
Yeah. What?
Yeah. So I think very often than not is what I was saying to you. You know, those things that put us a little bit behind, that the stereotype of what is good works most of the time on the stage in the clown world, works in our favor. But if I go to the bank, this thing that everybody laughs of my accent, no one likes it.
Okay.
So that's why there are people who, so for instance, your language, if it's not your mother language and you don't speak very well, could be an asset for you, for your comedy. But maybe you decided not to play it. Maybe you said, no, I want to speak really good English. So, and then when I have played shows where I had to speak really good English, I really work on my English and I didn't get the laughs because of my language. You see what I'm saying? So I think you can choose. And in some things you can't, but very often you can.
It's an interesting thought because I did something a while ago where I went to a comedy gig in France and I was trying to do comedy in French, but I barely know any French. And I tried to do the whole set in French. Before I went on stage, I was saying to myself, what the fuck are you doing? And I was excited beforehand, but when I was about to get on stage, I was nervous. I was like, what the hell is going on? And I tried to get the guy to translate my set in French. I tried to get a set, and then I tried to do the set in French. But what was funny was I was stood there for a minute, not knowing what to do a couple of times. And that's what made people laugh. And I did that many times. And they laughed like mad when I did that.
Yeah. Yeah. And but for me, I hear you. And that's the interesting thing will be to do it another time just to see what happens.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because it will be complicated, but for sure you find something, and if you know how to repeat it, do it as many times as until it doesn't work any longer. But I will say that there is something that the clown has and brings to the performance, to any kind of performance, which is the pleasure that he gets for what he's doing. And if you do that if you do the same thing far too many times, you might lose the pleasure. Or it becomes a little bit artificial, or it becomes a little bit wooden. So it's always good to look for new things and to explore where your clown can be apart from the places where you, where it always is. Like said, I've been doing this, my act in France for many years badly. I'm going to try to do it in German, in France. Do you know what I'm saying? Just to see what happens. And that playfulness is also part of the clown. Those kind of stupid ideas for me.
Yeah. This may not sound too philosophical, but it reminds me of a lot of things when they say, I'm going to do this when I've achieved this and that, or when I've done this and that. And a lot of people say, there's never a perfect time to do this or that. You just have to go out there, enjoy yourself and do it. And is that part of like with the clowning thing? Because if you think about it, like going on stage, trying to do comedy in French or a language you don't know, you're not going to do it. It just doesn't make any sense. But if you just do it and you have fun with it.
Exactly. This is exactly what you say. Because I think also with the clown, you want new fun things to do. Now, I don't see the connection with this, that thing that you say the other thing of saying, if you don't do it now, you are never going to do it. Normally, clowns, in my opinion, we say, I do this now. Oh, wow, wow, wow. And that's the only thing I want to do. I'm having so much fun. Blah, 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 blah. Oh, I'm not having so much fun now with this. What do I want to do now? Oh, and now I want to do this other thing. Then you do the other thing. Do you know what I'm saying? It's not like... That's, I think.
So you mean that they're doing this thing, they're getting bored of it, but, oh, let's try and do something else. Oh, I found this. I'll go and do it.
Exactly. Exactly.
But what I meant by what I said before was like, when you wait to have everything in place and have everything all well thought out or before you go out and do things.
Ah, okay, okay.
That's what I was getting at.
Yes, okay, I hit you now. Sorry, I don't understand. But normally I don't do things like that because I rehearse almost everything. And so if I have thought that I'm going to do it, I have rehearsed it, and I have found ways of making sure that I will do that.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm saying? Oh, or maybe I leave a little gap. I say, well, I'm going to play this thing here. And if it's very good, you remember in rehearsals, I did this and then you did that and then we did that. Let's try.
Okay.
But only if everybody's laughing a lot.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. That's a different viewpoint. But yeah, I think it's that's cool. Well, it's as you said before,
we're not saying anything different.
Yeah, it's just a different point of it's just
a different way of talking about it.
The same thing. Now, for anyone that is listening to the podcast now, and they want to find out about you, where do they find out about you? Do they find out about you on LA beaches surfing? Do they find out about you in Tinder?
Yeah. I hope they will find me in LA beaches, but no, you just have to go to spymonkey.co.uk and spymonkey.com, I think. And that's all there is. Everything is there about me.
Everything. Yeah. Even the address, guys. Even his address.
I think so. I don't know. maybe, but I don't think so. I think that is my email address, but not I don't know.
if there's a few people that come to your address and they come for me, what should I say?
You just said, just give them my email and then they will have to write it.
But if they come to your home address.
I don't think my wife will open the door.
Well, guys, you know where to find out about Arthur. You know where to find out about Spy Monkey. Any last words? What do you want to say to
Marvin? Thank you so much. It was so much fun. I enjoy very much. I hope we were entertaining for everyone who likes this business. And it was a pleasure to meet you. And I hope that we can meet each other's life at one point.
Okay, me too. And guys, make sure you share this episode everywhere. You subscribe and give this review a podcast. It's either a podcast, a 5-star review on Amazon or iTunes. Okay, guys.
Okay.
All right.